Redbox Media invites you to bless the yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit redboxmedia.com.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Redbox Media. All right, here we go. Episode 128. But this first segment, or the first part, I don't know how long it's going to go, of this episode is entitled, If a Thing is Worth Doing, It's Worth Doing Badly. Which is my favorite G.K. Chesterton quote. Let me let you behind the curtain a little here. This is episode 28.2. This is the second attempt at 128. So you guys got a rerun on Friday because we had tech issues. And I had an incredible interview with Chris Stefanik, which we've been trying to schedule for forever. And I use the same everything I always use with the same settings, the same everything. And my voice was just distorted so bad. I don't know what in the world happened. I swear this whole world of gadgetry that one uses to capture one's voice and conduct it later to you or across waves to you is frustrating me. It's amazing to me. There's this Gremlins, man. You can use the exact same tools, the exact same setup in the exact same room, and out of nowhere, some important interview with a good friend of yours just goes to hell. It's just like, so there you go. Like I said, if a thing is worth doing, it's worth doing badly. Speaking of things that are worth doing badly, this episode, I am in my studio at home, and for some reason, someone is running some giant something somewhere. I don't know. It sounds like maybe someone's getting their carpets cleaned or something. I don't know what's going on. There's a giant hum in the background. I'm ready to just sell it all and move to Kentucky down the street from where Redbox Media is so I can go sit in a studio and have people that know what they're doing work on this stuff. But so I had an incredible interview with Chris Stefanik on Friday. We're trying to clean it up and see if there's something we could possibly do with it. I might make it the first thing that we let out on kind of like our behind the counter kind of insiders thing, if we ever kind of decide to do that. I don't know, maybe God will smile and someone will figure out how to make it usable. It was such a good interview. It was a total bromance too. You gotta get a feel for what it's like to actually hang out with me and Stefanik. Except I think Stefanik was attempting his best to try to find me a wife because he just kept endorsing multiple aspects of my personality and skills and addressing that endorsement and affirmation to the ladies in the audience. So, I mean, I'm not going to gripe. I mean, if you're listening and you're Catholic famous and you want to help me, or even real famous, and you want to help me find a woman, even if you're nobody, if you want to help me find a wife, I'm not going to gripe at you. I could use one. But we had a great time. So we're going to attempt it again. You will get, and it was so fun too. So we had a blast doing it. So, and it was really easy if it would have worked out. So hopefully Chris and I will get together on a little more regular basis once my time is a little more supple and I can work around his schedule. So yeah, that was fun, but unfortunately you guys didn't get to hear it. So Like I said, if a thing is worth doing, it's worth doing badly. Speaking of things that are worth doing badly, exercise. So, when I was a kid, I used to bike a lot. You know, as a little kid, I used to just BMX bike all over the place. And, you know, until I kind of started skateboarding all the time when I was like 12 or 13. But before that, I just lived on a BMX bike. And even then, I kind of had a bike. And I you know, even had a freestyle BMX bike for a while, even though I never really got into that or got good at it in any way. And then when I was in my late teens, I started mountain biking a lot, and I really got into mountain biking, and I never really did the long, long road riding. It just always kind of bored me. But anyway, so I just, you know, I'm just like trying to get in shape, trying to get myself together. So I bought a bike last fall, and I got it set up, and I got to ride it a few times before the weather got ugly, and I just haven't ever dug it out. And so I, out over the weekend, I forced myself to dig out my bike, took it down to the bike shop, got the tires aired up properly. You know, I aired the tires up, but I didn't have a gauge. So took it down and finished it up to where it needs to go. And, you know, and just kind of rode it down to South Broadway and got a cup of coffee at Metropolis. And I decided, hey, you know what? I'm going to go to confession at Our Lady of Lourdes. It's about 3 miles each way. It'd be about a 6 mile ride altogether. You know, no big, right? I used to ride way more than that. You know, I'm out of shape, but I can do this, right? And I mean, yeah, I was huffing and puffing pretty good. And, you know, my right knee kind of started hurting because I was kind of holding it at a weird angle. But the reason it was all hurting is that my butt was just absolutely killing me. I don't know how anyone, I mean, I know you get used to a saddle, but, and maybe just having, you know, someone as big as me sitting on, you know, it's like having some, you, if you, if an average person got on a bike and then put like a large kid or like a woman on their back or something, that would be basically what I got going on, I guess. It's like, but man, I tell you what, I was just like going a block, stopping and having to like stand on the pedals and coast, like trying, oh, I was just hurting so hard. So I ordered some shorts that I can, you know, with the padding, the gel padding in them. But you know what? It's these little things. You're like, oh, okay. I mean, I want to exercise. I want to do something. And you're thinking, like, am I going to get too tired? I'm going to put a sweat on, and I'm going to get the heat breathing hard. Is my cardiovascular good enough to do this? You know, you're thinking about, like, all that sexy kind of, like, you know, pushing it and seeing how far you can go kind of stuff. What you don't think about is you're not going to be that tired, but you're not going to be able to sit down on the seat. Because, you know, your butt muscles and your tailbone and stuff are just not used to sitting on a hard seat. So we're going to try padded shorts and maybe buy a big fat. I already have like commuter bars, and now I'm going to be having the big giant seat. This is just an act of humility. I used to ride like a cool Cannondale, like all low slung and kind of the kind of fierce looking geometry, you know, for mountain biking and all this. And now I'm like riding the total like dad bike. Now it's going to be a dad bike with a giant seat on it. As good old Gilbert Keith Chesterton said, if a thing is worth doing, it is worth doing badly. So I don't know. That's what I did Saturday. It took me, hey, the hum stopped. They stopped whatever that ridiculous motor sound was outside of my studio. Good. So we can erase that. So see, things are working out. Things are getting better already if you just push through. So over the week, so that's what I did on Saturday. And then I don't know, Sunday rolled around. And Sunday was just kind of like, brah. I wanted to sleep in pretty late, and I misset my alarm, and I didn't wake up in time to go to Mass. So But I'd had really bad night's sleep the last few nights. So, I had one, you know, I just over the weekends, I try to like hunker down. I get like really good night's sleep a couple nights over the weekend. Then I end up living on like 5 hours, 2 or 3 days a week, which is bad. I know it's bad. You're not supposed to do that. And it's probably part of the reason that I'm having trouble getting in shape is because rest is like uber important. But, you know, so I'm like, okay, so I have to go to Mass tonight, which, I mean, I want to go to Mass. I'm not saying, oh, I have to go to Mass. I have to go receive the incarnate presence of the living God underneath the symbol of bread and wine, you know. No, I like going to Mass. I want to receive the very presence of the living God in the Eucharist, right? But then it's like, okay, you know, you're kind of figuring out what to do with your day. And so I got up and I had this idea that I was going to go someplace, get some coffee, and just write in my journal for a while. I've just been feeling a need. I've tried this 3 or 4 times. Just kind of dump all my just kind of what's going on right now, all of my, you know, combination journaling, venting, also just kind of like emptying my head, kind of like, you know, David Allen getting things done style, you know, just kind of getting everything out of my head and just kind of so I can identify projects and next actions on this stuff. But at the same time, I just wanted to journal and get myself kind of see what came out and just really just without thinking go everywhere from repair credit to alter my entire spiritual existence, you know, right? Just everything about everything, you know, and just kind of just get it all out so that I could work with it. And I've tried to do this a couple of times. And so I went on a quest to find a place to work because there were just people all over the house going in and out, in and out. And it was too loud and just too distracting. I'm an ENFP. And so it's like when I need solitude, I need solitude. I need either no one around me I know or I'm interested in. I guess I need to be alone or at least alone in a crowd. So, all right. So let's let me be alone during the break here. And we'll come back in just a second and we'll finish up that. So you're listening to The Counterposition. I am your host, Andrew Ray. We'll be right back.
Breadbox Media invites you to Bless the Yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit breadboxmedia.com.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. All right, so yeah, I just wanted to just go find a place to write, you know? And so I needed some breakfast. And so I went, now that part started off good. I needed some brunch. So I went to La Calle, which is like my favorite straight up hole in the wall Mexican joint. 5280 gave them Westward Magazine gave them best tacos in Denver a couple years ago. And that's how I found them. So if you're in the Denver area, La Calle, the street, La Calle on Alameda and Tejon, little hole in the wall Mexican joint, just like takes me back. I feel like I'm on the avenue in Ventura, California, going to Lalo's or something, man. It's like, oh, I love me some straight up hole in the wall Mexican food, man. So I went and did that, and I had to go get some milk for the shop and make sure we had milk to open. And I just did what I always do, which so I want to talk about this process a little bit. It's like I always just like start I don't know how to say it, just driving around in circles, just kind of like driving around trying to find some place that I can, you know, sit down and open my journal and get a coffee and write. And it's like, oh no, that place is too loud, that place is too crowded, oh those chairs hurt my back, no I can't, oh that one guy works there and he always tries to talk to me, oh there's that, oh man, and it's like I drive around in circles. It doesn't matter. I used to do this in Ventura, California all the time. And I drive around, trying to find someplace. And there's two things. It takes me a few hours of driving around to remember this. And then I have a blinding flash of the obvious, and I remember that I've remembered this 1,000 times. That the problem isn't in the places. It's in me. And the other half of that is, in as much as it is a problem with the places, I'm driving around looking for the place that doesn't exist because I'm called to build it. So it's like, this is like 20 years I've been doing that. And it's not like I haven't attempted it a couple times, but yeah, so I did my thing, man. This is like, if this is one of my rituals, one of my, and I don't mean to do it. It's just like, you know, you start, no, hey, let's go there. No. Then you drive past one place. It's really crowded in there. And I know if I go in and it's just super crowded, I'm not going to get any riding done. And then it's like, okay, well, I'll go this other place. And God, their coffee is so bad and the music's really loud. I'm not going to go there. Then you're just like, okay, well, I think I'm just going to go home. So you drive by the house, bunch of people at the house, and you're like, gah. Okay, so I'll go back to my shop. It's closed over the weekend. No one's there. I can have a shop all to myself. Then you get about halfway there, and you're like, no, then I'm going to be thinking about tons of work stuff and worrying about that. It's just like, so I did my thing where I was driving in circles, and then I said, okay. I realized I was doing my thing where I drive in circles, and I said, you know what? You did something different yesterday. You got up. You got your bike out, you fought through it, and you did something different. And yes, it sucked, and your butt hurt, you're tired, and your knee was hurting. But you got a bunch of exercise, and now your bike's out and ready to go. And now you figured out that you need to get like some shorts or a new seat or something. So you made some progress. Do something different than what you normally do. So instead of, I just scrapped the idea of riding. Because I realized it just wasn't going to happen that day. And there is a piece of land outside of Denver that I saw on realtor.com. I've been kind of thinking about maybe growing up and buying something instead of renting all the time. And there's a piece of land out there. And I just kind of think it'd be cool to say that I own some land. I don't know. And it was like $40,000. And I looked at the monthly payment on it, and it would be really, really low if I bought it and financed it. I can't really do that now, but I was thinking, you know, it'd be cool to have some cool land, go out and like camp on my land, and eventually kind of like work towards building something. And me and Justin Schneer have been looking at these little modular hobbit home things. And they're so cool. They screw together on site. You install them, put them on a pad, and then you cover them with dirt and stuff grows over them. And they look just like hobbit homes, and they're like $40 a square foot. So I've been nursing this little fantasy about buying this land outside of Denver. And it's on a paved road. There's already power going to it and everything. And, you know, kind of getting kind of off grid, building this little hobbit home, putting some solar panels out because we get so much sun. And, you know, and all that, just kind of, you know, and I thought, you know what, I'm just going to go look at that land. It's like 10 miles on the other side of Golden, and that'll be a nice little drive. So I drove out through Golden, and sure enough, I got lost. I took the wrong, I had to turn around, and then I was in this, when I turned back around, the lights at 6th, where 6, Highway 6, kind of, you have to turn left to stay on it instead of going into Golden. They broke and they were on flashing red. So it was like this huge amount of traffic basically coming to a four-way stop. So I stuck in traffic for forever out in the middle of nowhere. Finally made it through all that, climbing up and I was really stoked on how mountainous and how like real alpine the road going to this land was, even though it's just outside Golden. So I drove out through the like foothills where people are fly fishing and stuff. And then my car started kind of like not working very well. So I've been needing to get something worked on my car. And I finally get to this place and it is straight up. So I like take this dirt paved road straight up, switchbacks. I get to the top and I realize that the reason this piece of property was so cheap, it's 2.5 acres. The reason it's so cheap is it's the side of a mountain. I mean, it is literally, really, really, really steep, like almost not straight down, but not straight down. I mean, it's the side of a mountain, and it would take a ton of effort and money to trellis that and, you know, kind of build. I mean, people do it out here and all the contractors know how to do it, but this isn't like it's a piece of property I could go hang out on or something. So I was all disappointed, and my car smelled like oil. And then I drove back, and I was just like, oh god, I was just like so frustrated that just nothing was going the way I wanted it to go that day. Everything, every idea I had, I would have this idea. And what do you do when you have an idea? Like, you go, oh, okay, hey, let's do that. And then you picture in your head what it's going to be like. Oh, yeah, we'll go out there. It'll be nice. Maybe I'll walk around on the property a little bit. And it's like, and then it just kind of lets you down. Reality kind of lets you down. So to continue that theme, I remembered, and since it was Sunday cheat day, there was a place in northern part of Denver that has St. Louis style pizza, like Emo's Pizza with the Provolone cheese and the cracker crust and all that. And I've been wanting to go check it out. And I was pretty close to it as I came back down to 70. So I'm like, hey, I'm going to go check out this pizza. And I went, and it was nice enough. I mean, it was good. But they have the wrong oven, and it wasn't crispy on the bottom, and the bacon was like bits instead of like big strips of bacon like Emo's does. And it was just like, ah, it was the same thing. Like, yeah, that's lasagna and this is lasagna. I mean, it was the same dish, which was kind of cool to taste some of those same flavors from back home, because I grew up, you know, like delivering for Emo's Pizza back in the day and stuff. And so, but it was just like, yeah, it was good, but it really fell short, you know. I mean, I wouldn't like slam them on Yelp, because I mean, what I'm comparing them to is how close did they get to another particular restaurant. But that's not a fair thing to do. It was perfectly good pizza, delicious, nothing wrong with it. It just, they did it slightly different than what I was craving and trying to replace without driving all the way to St. Louis, Missouri, or at least Kansas City, I think, is the closest Emo's. So, and then I just went to Mass. I just drove home, went to Mass, ended up watching a bunch of my roommate. One of my roommates was catching up. He had never watched Marvel Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And so I'm kind of a fanboy for that show. And so we ended up binge watching 3 or 4 episodes of Marvel Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. So, and then I went to bed. So there you go. If a thing is worth doing, it's worth doing badly. And most of that wasn't even worth doing, but I did it badly anyway. So that's what happened over the weekend. Man, my chatty first segment, you know, became 2 segments. But it's seriously, I mean, I think that, I don't know about you. I'm going to just kind of, we'll use this as a transition. It's like, I don't know about you, but, you know, there's different things play a different role in different people's lives. And one of the things that if I had to kind of look at my life and go, okay, what has been one of the greatest obstacles I've faced in my life? And what is something that is like, let's name the demon that I kind of have to face like on a daily basis. And one of those is frustration. And I think it's part of, you know, I bought a copy of, I lost my copy of Prayer and Temperament. Actually, I loaned it to the lovely and talented Bridget McCarthy. So if you're listening, Bridget McCarthy, oh, actually, no, it was, there's a longer story there. Never mind, you're off the hook, Bridget. So I didn't have a copy of this book, and somebody brought it up. So I bought Prayer and Temperament, which is comparing different styles of prayer to the different Myers-Briggs types. Pretty interesting book. I'd read it before, and so I got it, and I read it a little bit again. And I tell you what, this reminded me how I am just ENFP until the wheels fall off. So Myers-Briggs is like a personality type system, and they give you, there's 4 pairs, and in your kind of your core 2 in the middle, you're either sensing, or sensing into or intuition, and feeling or thinking. And I'm an NF, even though I'm such a cerebral NF. I think a lot, but I'm an ENFP. So I'm an extrovert, intuitive, feeling perceiver, you know? And so that plays into this whole thing. Now I ran out of time. So, all right, I'm going to come back and talk about the ENFP thing and how that plays in with frustration. And then I got a better, more interesting thing to talk about that I thought about and heard somebody talk about over the weekend. So you're listening to The Counterposition. We'll be right back.
Redbox Media invites you to Bless the Yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit redboxmedia.com.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Redbox Media. And alas, speaking of frustration, someone turned the stupid motor back on and there's a hum in the background. I'm going to have to just like, I'm going to have to pad this studio. I'm going to have to get off my butt, finally designate a room in my home and just cover the walls with egg foam or something. Or go get an actual studio on the tiers. I heard this over the weekend for Live Urban Realty. They called it. It's specializing in the city close neighborhoods. And yeah, that's kind of where I'm a city close neighborhood. We're not downtown, but we're close enough to, you know, if you're ambitious, walk downtown. If you're a little less ambitious, easily bike downtown on the bike trail. Or you can Uber down to the heart of everything for the minimum of around $5. So, I mean, I'm kind of in there. So it's a pretty dense urban neighborhood. And if you're not careful, it's hard to catch it when there's just no one making noise. Now, I hear it silent all the time and don't need to record or to do a show. So I should just start going, oh, it's quiet. It's time for The Counterposition. Anyway, so frustration. So the ENFP thing, one of the things that, I don't know, there's only about 11%, I think 11, 12% of the population are ENFs. So I'm a weirdo, right? So it's like we get really, really idealistic and we get this picture out there of what something's going to be. And it's just going to be awesome, and we're all going to go, and we're all going to be there, and we're going to be there together, and it's going to be amazing, and I'm going to say this, and people are going to laugh or whatever. we're going to have this big, deep conversation, and, you know, you just get this all in your head about how something's going to go, or, oh, we're going to build it, and all these cool people are going to come, and they're going to hang out, and this coffee's going to be so good, and it's going to be like this cool scene, and everyone's going to respond, and people are going to thank you for putting this shop in a small town, and working so hard to make it cool. I'm looking at you, Cape Girardeau, in Fillmore, California, and then no one comes, and no one cares. It's like, instead of just going, oh, well, that didn't work, let's try something else. If you're NF, it just absolutely devastates you because reality has fallen short and we feel that reality in our head of what something's going to be is like very, very real. And so then when that doesn't happen, it's just almost physically painful. Frustration is very painful for people like me. And so I think that's a good thing to figure out, to just kind of go, oh, and get a little dispassionate and not be so attached to an outcome and maybe just have a little wonder and a little spontaneity and go, oh, well, that didn't happen. Oh, I didn't, I didn't get to, I just couldn't calm my mind enough to read or write my journal. So I got to go see that land. The land didn't turn out to be what it was, but it was kind of cool. I got to see the beautiful canyon with all those people hanging out fly fishing, and maybe I'll start fly fishing. That sounds kind of fun. But then the problem with me is I would go, okay, it's gonna be awesome. I'm gonna fly fish and I'm gonna get this gear and I'm gonna go out there and it's gonna be awesome. It's just gonna be just like a river runs through it. And I'm gonna be out there and it's gonna be super zen and I'm gonna be fly fishing and I'm gonna be all recollected and fly fishing and kind of peaceful and zenned out. And then I'm gonna catch a big trout and I'm gonna take it home and I'm going to cook it with potatoes and garlic and I'm going to roast this trout up and pan fry it and then put it in the oven and finish it off and it's going to be so good. And then you just kind of go when it rains or you keep getting something snagged and you don't ever catch a fish. It's just like, and then I would just go, that's it, I'm never going fishing again. It's just like, it's absolutely pathetic, I admit it. Okay, I need to get on to my topic because we only have a segment and a half left. I probably don't have too much more than a segment and a half. Okay, so, cut, stop. We're going to start a whole new topic here. Well, this isn't a whole new topic, actually. I think if I wanted to be creative, I could create a transition for this. But why be creative? Let's just do a transition. So over the weekend, I was watching... Saturday night after I came home and I was absolutely, no, it was Friday night after the great Chris Stefanik interview fiasco. I was just frustrated. I'm not going to lie to anyone. I'm going to be honest with you guys. I did probably the best interview we've ever done. It was a great interview. I was so stoked on it. I just could not wait. And you guys were going to hear it, and Chris was going to tweet it out, and he's got like 8 bazillion Twitter followers, and I was all ready to sit around over the weekend and watch the counter position kind of blow up a little bit and go around the Twitterverse via, and now there's sirens, cool. Now we have hum and sirens. And I was going to watch the counter position go around the Twitterverse and the Facebook because all of Chris's followers. And it's going to be so fun. People are going to get to hear me having a good time with one of my best friends. And it all kind of went to hell in a handbasket. So I basically came home, which, by the way, I wasn't drinking over Lent, and I've fallen off that bandwagon, which scares me, and I need to look at it. But I came home, I got a bottle of wine on the way home, opened a bottle of wine, and I ended up watching, made some food, and started watching Michael Pollan's new show, Cooked. It's four documentary things based on the four sections of his book. He's the same guy that wrote The Omnivore's Dilemma and other things. And, he did his famous rules like, eat food, not too much, mostly plants. I mean, he had like a bunch of Pollan's rules, which I think are pretty good, actually, for the most part. If you're correct in how you interpret what he says. Anyway, so Pollan did this new... show Cooked, and the first one was fire, and so I watched it, and it was about barbecue and Aborigines and all this stuff, and and if you know me, the whole paleo thing, man, he's following Aborigines around while they're like killing and burying crap and a fire in the ground and like eating all a kangaroo they killed, and then they're talking to a pit going back and forth to this pit master that's talking about barbecue and this whole hog barbecue, and they're doing one. It's a really good episode, the fire episode of Michael Pollan's Cooked. I think it's a Netflix exclusive. Really good stuff. And Pollan said something that... Do you ever have all the pieces and all the insights on something, and you've said all the premises... But no one ever, it's never occurred to you to put these things together, which is really funny for me because I put weird things together all the time, right? So you've heard me go on and on and on about our place in the ontological pecking order, if you will, that ladder of types of being from minerals and chemicals all the way up to God and angels and then God, and we're in this weird place where we're a spiritual being, but we're, we have an eternal soul or an everlasting soul. And we're kind of tied to this flesh. We're tied to this stuff, right? And so I talk about that. I've talked about that several times, about the nature of being mattered, of having matter and what that's like and how's that different and being the kind of thing that can reflect on having matter, but having matter, so we're a person, but we've got a lot in common with things that are not persons, where it's like, you know, you look at angels and they're persons and they're kind of only persons. They're just an intellect and a free will. I mean, it's just they're non-corporeal. We have what they have, but we're kind of tied to this stuff, right? So I've talked about that a lot. I've done a whole show on the angelic nature and kind of our place in the pecking order. And I've gone on, and obviously with Calyx, I go on and on and on about, you know, hospitality and eating and cooking and all of that, and how human it is and how important it is, and how, you know, and I think about that as I do that for a living. I make things for people for a living. I cook and prepare and give people things for a living. And I write about that. I founded an entire apostolate, Calyx, that's C-A-L-I-X, calyx.org. I created an entire apostolate to help people build places to use this incredibly human activity to build relationships. And then Pollen said something over the weekend that just got me, something I cannot believe it hadn't occurred to me, that we are the only being in the universe that we know of that cooks. I mean, think about that. I mean, there are animals that will kill something, bury it, let it ferment, and come back and eat fermented food. And that's a kind of cooking. But think about this. You know, and we know that our bodies are made to eat cooked food. Fire has been a part of our species for so long that we've evolved alongside to adapt to it, you know. And there's a good argument that cooked food and the increased amount of the ability to digest that food helped us kind of like decrease our gut size and increase our brain size and kind of made us who we are. And I mean, meat initially as scavengers and then hunters, but really where it amped up, there's a book about that. I can't, like The Nature of Fire or something with fire. There's a book about how our species has been marked and characterized by the use of fire. So when we get back, I'm going to explore that literally and as a metaphor a little bit. So you're listening to The Counter Position. I'm your host, Andrew Whaley. We'll be right back.
Redbox Media invites you to Bless the Yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit redboxmedia.com.
Welcome back to The Counter Position. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Redbox Media. So you may have noticed that I haven't been taking nearly as many drinks of coffee. Well, there's a reason, because I was out of coffee and I bought this Trader Joe's cold brew concentrate just to play with and look at, because I got kind of a little project I'm working on for concentrates, and I just wanted to kind of see what they did with what the shelf stable concentrate that they made was. And so I was kind of playing around with this, and so I had that here and I needed caffeine. So I made a hot cup of coffee out of this concentrate, and suffice to say, it is nowhere near the normal coffee I drink. Yet again, more frustration. It's a theme tonight. Anyway, let's go back to fire and cooking. I think this is fascinating. So, and then I got to thinking, in case you just tuned in, I was listening to Michael Pollan, or watching the show Cooked, the first episode, Fire, by Michael Pollan. And I know if you've listened to The Counter Position at all, between Francis Mallman and the Chef's Table and The Mind of a Chef and episodes of Anthony Bourdain's, you know, like No Reservations or Parts Unknown, and now this, I love cooking with fire, and I love being around people cooking with fire, and I love even just watching television where there's people cooking with fire. This is, if you've been listening a while, you've heard this theme come up time and again. And I think that that's true. I think there's something very primal about fire itself, that we are the only, we're fire users in a sense when you think about it. And he made a great observation that, you know, look, you turn on this this light bulb and we don't think about it, but there's fire involved. There's a filament heating up, or there's something getting hot. And if not, even, let's just say it's like some kind of pure LED or something like that, somewhere behind this, there's like some coal or something burning someplace to make this electricity. And or there's, even if it's solar, there's a fusion fire reaction in a sun putting out heat and light someplace. Fire is like behind all this stuff, right? We use fire. And so it's kind of a, when you actually build a fire, like when you're camping or at the fire pit in the backyard or something, you know, then it's like you're cutting out the middleman. You know, you're experiencing the thing that kind of defines one of the things that defines us as a species, kind of raw right in front of you. No pun intended. Not raw, but cooked. And so, yeah, but then going back to what he said is that we are the only species that cooks. So to go get, I mean, think about this. You don't see a wolf take down an antelope or a deer or something and then go, hey, you know what would go good with this, and go bite some juniper berries and bite some rosemary and bring it over here and, you know, get a little bit of the juniper berry, a little bit of the rosemary, and then take a bite of dead antelope. They don't do that, right? They don't combine stuff, because instinct just wants calories to not die, right? But we're more than instinct, you know, we're more than that. Now that goes to our detriment sometimes, because we can eat a bunch of stuff that we're not built to eat, that's not for us, right? But but the idea that when you look at this, everything underneath us doesn't cook, and everything above us doesn't cook. And I got to thinking about what is the I was trying to think of what are the other things that that we only we do. And for one, laughter. We are the only species that laughs. Nothing below us has the intellect or the person that can kind of, you know, puppies and cats kind of frolic and do stuff. But, you know, when that cat's playing with that string that you're playing with it, he's practicing his skills for killing a mouse to eat or something. It's just instinct, you know. And then, you know, when your dog, you know, makes noises and stuff, he's not really reflecting and seeing. He's not really, he might be making noises because he's feeling positive. I mean, they have a certain rudimentary emotion, but to have the real experience of a person laughing, we're the only ones, right? Because now angels and any other version of non-corporeal personal being out there can have joy, or maybe even, I don't know, be amused. There's a question. Could most jokes kind of work because of discursive thought? You know, there's this and there's this and there's this, there's kind of a misdirection, and then there's this, and you see the there's a punchline, right? But a non-corporeal intellect doesn't work that way. So they can have joy, but they don't have bodies. And to laugh is a very physical thing, kind of like, sneezing. Now, animals sneeze, though. But sneezing is something, it's like a kind of sneeze. Laughing is, right? It's a, you're letting out, or like, or almost like a hiccup, you know? You're letting out kind of a tension in your body in a joyous way, right? So I don't know, but the idea that just, I don't know where I'm going with this. It just really hit me that it made me grateful for matter and for being the kind of person that we are. Because you just, from cavemen back in the day to, you know, your grandma to just going to Chipotle, you know, it's like the idea that, you know, we can take all, we have the intellect in the space, we have the freedom. Think about what this has to happen. We have to have freedom. We have to have food and choose not to eat it right now. We have to have intellect and imagination to be able to think about. We have to have memory. We have to remember this sense experience with this other sense experience, and then we have to have imagination to speculate of what these two experiences would be like if they were together. So we've tasted salt, we've tasted garlic, we've tasted rosemary, we've tasted olive oil, and we've tasted lamb, right? That's actually what I'm going to cook tonight, I think. I got a leg of lamb that needs to be cooked. And, you know, but then it takes a certain something more human to go, oh, I'm going to not just tear into this lamb or eat this other stuff that I have. I'm going to wait and I'm going to combine all these things. And then I'm going to transform it with the use of this chemical reaction and fire, but not too much, but just enough. You know, we have to, we're able to have this art and to make something so beautiful as food or wine or coffee. And it is, I don't know, just hearing Pollen say that really hit me. It's like, yeah, that is so tied to who we are. And it's interesting that when we look at that, we look at, and we'll shut this down with the last few minutes here. We'll take and apply this here. So that is what is so fascinating about God becoming man in the person of Jesus Christ and in the incarnation, taking on flesh, incarnate, you know, in, you know, flesh, is that God, the highest, higher than all the angels, came down and took part in this. He laughed, he sneezed, he, you know, got tired and felt water across his face when he swam. You know, he experienced that. He experienced everything that we experience. The scripture says that he was like us in every way except sin, you know? And one of the, you see the role that, you know, oh, that's the other thing. Oh, I ran out of time. I was watching an episode of Parts Unknown, and they were going between Palestine and Israel back and forth and eating with people and talking about stuff. And there was this, in southern Gaza, there was this really weird meal they made with roasting these small underripe watermelons and mixing them with bread and oil and yogurt and all stuff. And you saw these people eating, and a lot of in there. And every time you would see these people eat, they would eat out of this big tray, and they're all eating out of the same big plate. And some of them were just using their fingers. And one of the elders said, "God gave us fingers to eat, not spoons." And they're digging their fingers in and eating with their fingers. And you see how much a role that eating plays in the life of Christ. And he dines with these Pharisees. He keeps company. He eats in the house with these sinners, and people freak out. You know, Martha and Mary, all this stuff. And ultimately, the Eucharist. And that's what's amazing, is that the place that God chooses to give his deepest continued presence among us is in food, in bread and wine. he uses that. Why? I think it's because it's a symbol of where we are most human and most unique. It symbolizes us using the best of what we are. So, anyway, let's pull the plug, pop the cork on another episode of The Counterposition. I'm your host, Andrew Whaley. See you on the other side.
Redbox Media invites you to Bless the Yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit redboxmedia.com.